Welcome to yet another interview on Rethink Peer-to-Peer Kredite. I'm your host, Danny Neidhardt, and today I'm joined by the two strong voices, the two strong men of Debitum Network. On one side, we got Martin Slieberts, who is one of the founders from Debitum, and as far as I understand, now also the sole owner of the company. And on the other side, we got CEO Sergey Demchuk. Guys, thank you very much for taking some time today. First off, before we start, I would say with some more like Debitum related questions, please let our viewers and listeners know how you're doing personally and if you started off well in 2021.
Sure. For me, I think the start has been fantastic. There have been a lot of professional development in 2020 and a lot of plans for 2021 that we will talk later on. So I'm really motivated, focused, and full of energy. And also personally, it has been a great time for me, spending a lot of quality time with family, because now that's all you can do in this region. But not only because of that, but I think that's really valuable for each and every one of us to spend more time with the loved ones. So I'm actually enjoying my time at the moment.
You, Sergey?
Yes. Hi, Danny. Pleasure being here with you. Yeah, my year started also well. In terms of work, we have a lot of good things upcoming, and I think we will discuss about it today. Yeah, and personal life also, everything's good. Yeah.
All right. That sounds very good and promising. Small talk, not one of my strengths, so I would say let's just skip right into the business talk. I shared with you up front a few topics that I would like to discuss. A big topic, so also for the listeners and the viewers, to me today is the financial situation of the company. I think there's a lot surrounding this topic, which is something Debitum never has really commented, or there's no really public statement. So I'm quite curious for your answers today. But before, you know, it's something people maybe are a bit tired of already. That's why I want to, you know, get this right off the table. Talking about pandemic, talking about 2020. It's really just one question as a kind of very small review where, if you want, you can both answer just very shortly. How did the platform manage to deal with the circumstances last year, which obviously have been quite extraordinary and a bit of, you know, coming out of very unexpected, and how was it affecting the business and does it still?
Yeah, I can start. To be honest, we had a very good year. 2020 for us was a good year of really great growth. So we started 2020 with a portfolio less than 2 million, and in the end of the year we had more than 4 million of invested volumes on the platform. We onboarded many new loan originators. So we found like really good niche loan originators that provide good assets to our investors. I think we have 5 new loan originators during this year. During the year, we had like different situations, but all in all, everything is great. Yeah, so we are growing. We have a lot of assets now to offer for our investors. Investors appreciate that. No, we are happy with them. They're happy with us. I hope so. Yes. So I'm very positive about last year.
I think, Danny, what we did, there is this old saying that in every crisis, in every like downturn, there's actually a huge opportunity. And you can see the problem or you can see the opportunity. So I think Sergey and the team, we saw the opportunity. They saw the opportunity, they took it, and that it managed our growth. And I'm very happy about that. And I think it's a strong also signal for our investors that we are a good platform. We are a great platform. We see our opportunity to grow.
Hmm. What I personally find very interesting, you know, understanding like, as you say, like in every crisis, you can also a little bit see like how companies respond, and somehow also the performance is affected a bit. With Debitum, obviously, I think like you had quite or very little until or almost no problems with your lending companies that you have onboarded on the platform. Is that maybe also in parts because lending companies have also been, you know, been provided strongly, for instance, with Novity Finance, with funds from European, like, supporting funds with programs that made it also a bit easier for them to allocate than some funds to other companies, or because I think it was also a bit like slowing down a little bit the origination level at some point, you know, obviously having on one side the investors being a bit more cautious about their investments, but on the other side also like the origination as such from the lending companies decreased a bit because of those circumstances. Just like give some insights to how the performance developed with your collaboration partners.
Sure. No, on that, what I can say that some of our loan originators really received good support from state, like to support small businesses. There is like one example, Novity Finance is a Lithuanian company. They received around 30 million of a credit line from Invega. It's a Lithuanian state agency that supports small business. And they actually helped a lot for small businesses in Lithuania. Same for our UK partner, Cube Funder. Their clients received support from UK government. So in many cases that helped. But I think the key factor is not only this. Key factor is our risk assessment. I think we talked about that so many times that actually I didn't want to speak about that, but since you asked, I have to say it one more time. And for us in 2019 and the beginning of 2020, we actually thought that we are too conservative when it comes to risk assessment. But life and this crisis showed that we were correct. And that's why none of our loan originators actually failed to repay the obligations. Of course, there's some cases of defaults for their final borrowers happened, but almost settled in a proper manner. So I think it's like, okay, yes, support of government in some cases, but most important that the quality of due diligence and the quality of onboarded loan originators on the platform, that paid us back. Yes, that's what I would say. Mm.
And also a quick one. I think it's the same old debate about business loans versus payday loans, right? I think because most of the platforms that saw issues were payday loan-based platforms. And it's not a big economic secret that those are the areas that are hit first. While businesses, as you saw in many countries, also in the regions that we work, businesses are always supported by the government to go through crisis because businesses are the backbone, a blood system of our economy, of our kind of economic life. So I think our niche, right, our targeting into the business area, I think that also is a great thing. But the team did a tremendously great job.
I think that's a good point, but I think it's also more a bit of an immediate effect because I would argue same with real estate that also business loans that maybe the effect and the performance maybe now, of course, maybe even some unprofitable companies are kind of artificially blown up with funds. And so the effect and the defaults will come at a very much later stage. Is that something you're concerned about somehow?
No. With this, you mean the business loan support?
Yes. Or
I think no, that might happen for sure with some cases. But look, the situation is the following: that there was crisis right now for some businesses, and they needed this support. When everything comes back to normal life, the business still is able to perform to pay a loan back. And it shouldn't be like the same level of default. I think the problem was exactly. Especially in some spheres like restaurants, tourism, maybe in logistics as well. There was like segments like severely affected by lockdowns, and that was needed support. So of course some cases will happen in the future, but if that no. Now it would be much more a problem if there is no support from government. Yeah.
Mm. Now, what we see, or when we like see like the origination level, it seems like, you know, as you also said, the outstanding loan portfolio is increasing or has increased in the last year. Now, on the other side, we could argue, okay, maybe Debitum is a little bit short in terms of demand from investors. Is that fair to say?
Now, yes, that's the situation. So in during the year was a bit different story that we had less assets because in the mid-year, in like early autumn, we were more cautious. Our loan originators, they were more cautious with new disbursement. But now situation is getting back to normal for many loan originators. And currently, we have really good assets to offer for our investors. And we constantly growing. So net growth every month is more and more. But since we have more loan originators now, we have more loans to offer, we need more investors. And we are happy to invite all of your followers who will listen to this interview to join Debitum to try to increase exposure with us. Because I do believe that many of guys who follow you, they already Debitum investors. But we are happy to give as much information as needed to make sure that you should increase your exposure from, let's say, 1,000 to 10,000 euro. Mm. Yes.
Yeah, the exposure level or the kind of the quality of investors is also something that I follow with a big curiosity, because it's something, an observation that I had that I also shared with Martins in a few weeks ago when we had a conversation. Because when I just look at the monthly statistics that Debitum is sharing on the blog, you see like that the number, the total number of investors that join the platform every month is kind of stable or even slightly decreasing month by month. At the same time, you see like there's bigger deposited amounts. And I think that's also a bit credited due to your decision that you took then last year in August or September, saying like, look, we just want to have like a certain, we don't want to have the very, very small retail investors that just, you know, want to try with a couple hundred bucks to invest on our platform. But we say the threshold is now 500 euro to deposit at least and 50 euro per asset. And I think also in the past, we discussed this also in various opportunities. You never made it a secret that you also said like strategically, we're also looking strongly also to acquire some institutional investors. So you're rather, you know, like growing vertically rather than horizontally when it comes to investor acquisition, I think. So how do you currently see this this balance between, yeah, just getting like really like the big fishes, the big institution investors? Is that like really the big focus of your work rather than really going for smaller retail investors, like I would also consider myself?
No, yes, actually we run into two directions, I would say. With retail investors, with a focus on more high net individuals, I would say, or like those who are willing to invest a significant amount. I believe that 500 minimum deposit is just a temporary measure. It will be even increased in the future, because what we saw that the quality of investors changed and requests that we receive from them changed. They ask questions like financial questions, not just asking, like, say, let's say, for cashback or something like that. Never happened before. Like it's happening now. It's like every week, someone dropped like first deposit ever, just registered and dropped 10k, 20k. So it's, sometimes it happened like this, and after that, we start speaking with that investor, and he understands better how we work, and he increased the exposure with the platform. So we like this approach, and investors appreciate that we can give them more information. We give them like personal approach. Like we see where they invest. So every time when, for example, new assets of that class uploaded to the platform, we just notify them. They like this personal approach. So this is what concerns retail investors. This is our strategy. It goes well. We will go in this direction further. As to institutionals, we also spend a lot of time on working with institutionals, explaining them how we work, why they can trust our due diligence. We provide as much information as needed. And those institutionals with whom we work, they also they are increasing exposure, and that happened in 2020, and for sure it will continue in this year. Yes. So we work in both segments. Mm-hmm. But on retail, as I said, it's in focus on bigger tickets, more, I wouldn't say more stable investors, but those who understand what is small business, investing in small businesses, and those who first and primary goal for them is to save the principal of the investment and only after that to get some decent return. Yes.
Then, and if I can add, I think that when you talk about investing, I have the strong positions that investing, it has to give you tangible result, right? And so when you invest 50 euro, you don't have any tangible result. Say if you earn even like 50 euro, even if you double it up per year in a miraculous way, it's not tangible. So I think that that's not really investing. It's more like playing. And I think that for anyone who is having a salary like 1,500, for example, to 2,500 euro, it is possible to save like 2-3 months and start with a 500 deposit. And so I think I don't buy if someone says me that 500 deposit is too large, because some guys drink 500 per night, right? Like if you go to Old Town, not anymore, but you could see this crazy thing. So you go to a restaurant, your bill could be like 200 euro or something. So when someone gives me this, like 500 is too high, I'm saying like something's not correct right there. And another thing is that I think what we don't stress enough, that we want to help our users to accumulate wealth and to actually grow their principal, right? Actually to keep that funding, to keep those funds and to become wealthier, how to say, to have more wealth in the future. And you can't do that if you do it with smaller amount. You have to do it constantly. You have to do it constantly, and you have to have a target to reach higher goals, right? You have to reach a target to save 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, 100,000. And such our approach can help to facilitate that, helps facilitate that habit of saving, of actually saving an investment and accumulation of wealth.
Mm. I think something or one aspect that could certainly enhance further trust from investors is the licensing now in Latvia. I know, Martins, it's a topic that you follow up very, very closely. You're like the main guy then also like looking after this topic. Now we had New Year, Debitum was changing the entity to ZRDN operator, which is kind of a legal also requirement in order to comply with that new license. Just a couple words maybe on the licensing process as such. When do you think like you will finally be receiving this license? And just like maybe you can share also a few insights throughout the process. What have been certain struggles, something behind the scenes that people probably don't really see from the outside looking in?
I see the first one is the way how you introduced it. You said that I'm the guy following it. And I think that was one of the biggest struggles we had last year, like in summer, that we chose a strategy of having external consultants helping us to create several packages of documents. And to be honest, they had experience in that, etc. But this platform business is not something common, right? And it's a new thing. It's a new twist to the same old licensing, to the same old license. So it failed miserably, to be honest. And as far as I hear from other, from regulator, from other companies, I hear that others are having similar struggles if they take external consultants. So what we did in autumn, and that helped really, really strongly, that we took all of those processes in our in-house, basically. We worked on all the procedures that we had to. And currently for us, we have finalized all the business procedures. We are already creating descriptions of investment opportunities, and we are in the middle, I would say, for IML procedures and procedure kind of batch. And but I think I would expect if nothing changes in the speed, how regulator answers and gives comments and provides feedback, and they have been tremendously awesome and great at that, and super fast. If that doesn't change, I think we still should get it in the first quarter. If it changes, if it becomes a bit more struggle, a bit slower, then I think we'll get it in like 2 months, 3 months tops. And the insight I hear that I understand that there are 2-3 platforms that are front running this licensing process in Latvia. And I understand that by changing this approach, throwing out consultants and taking it into our hands, I understand that we have joined that front runner group of companies that to get licensed. So no, I don't know if we will be the first one or not, but I think that we'll be in the first group. I hope so.
Hmm. Can you say what is it that you think will effectively change for Debitum having this licensing, having a brokerage firm license? What do you think? What do you think will effectively change mm-hmm. now for the platform? Can you make it also tangible? I understand it goes along with a lot of compliance, and it's also a certain level of costs involved to maintain the license. But how do you think you do it for a reason, and I think the benefits will outlast the costs, but what are the benefits, and can you make this tangible for the listeners?
Definitely. I think the kind of the real benefit is the investor protection. And I think when you just collaborate with a company, you basically have to trust that company, and there is no third party in reality, right, who is checking if everything is done by recommendation, by procedure, etc. When you regulate, there is a watchdog regulator who does constant audits on procedures, on processes, etc. And for them, the main reason and the key point for them is to keep investments safe and to keep investors safe. But it has also the other side of the coin, right? Because to keep investors safe, you have to gather more information, you have to fill more bureaucratic procedures, you have to fill more templates of documents to make sure, basically, in a way, you have to make sure that the investor is eligible to invest, has enough experience and knowledge and understanding, right? There is this MiFID directive, MiFID requirements, et cetera, et cetera. And you can see it already. I think that also we launched, if I'm not mistaken, the questionnaire for investors. For our users, that they have to start to fill questionnaires. Currently, it's kind of not mandatory yet. We are allowing not to fill right away, but they have to fill questionnaires now and indicate their experience, education, knowledge, etc. Answer some test-like questions, like in university or high school, like multiple choice tests, and they are scored based on that. And if the reality of that will change, that if your score is too low, like totally too low, basically we see that there is no understanding whatsoever about this investment product, then that such type of users will not be allowed on the platform. And that is one of the things how regulator makes it, right? They protect you by checking, by forcing us to check investor if investor is kind of smart enough, has enough experience to use that money. No, it's an interesting debate. I think it's a debate, it's a wholly different debate that can be done.
A whole different, but maybe just very quickly, because I find this curious. Do you have internally some predictions or some forecast how many investors could potentially fail this test, and how this then kind of negatively impacts your fund mm-hmm. flow?
They shouldn't. To be honest, the ones that are on the platform, unless they fill the test wrongly, they shouldn't fail it because the experience that they already have on Debitum platform basically would be enough for them to continue being on Debitum platform, right? So for the current users, it should not have any consequence for them. It might be maybe for someone, a new user, and I would say it would only be for us, for our case, how we have structured the algorithm and scoring methodology, basically it would be only for a person who has no education in finance and economics, has nothing to do with the finance and economics in terms of work, and has never done anything in finance and economics and investment. So say philosophy student right out of university, working in a law company or government institution, having no experience whatsoever with money. Maybe such person would not fit right away.
Sergey, let's bring you back into the conversation. I know that you're more focused also on the acquisition of those higher net worth individuals, of institutional investors. In your conversations, do you feel like acquiring this license will positively also impact then the acquisition process? And do you still have like bigger investors that say, look, when we have an additional layer of security, I know you work also a lot with SPVs and something to put also a bit more the mind of those investors at ease, you know, to structure their investments in a certain way. But do you think like this license is also a crucial element to even enhance also your progress on those institutional investors?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That will gives us very good growth opportunity. No, it's not a secret that some high net individuals and even institutionals, they worked with some platforms that actually failed. Yeah. So sometimes even if you are clever person, you understand financials, you are not protected of that situation that someone cheated on you. Yeah. And such things like regulation will at least, no, I say protect from that side, because it's like criminal record check, source of fund check, everything is already like more transparent. So for sure it will help. And I will give you just one simple example. Once we informed all our users that we are changing our legal entity for DN operator because it's requirement of a regulator, and the regulator gave us green light to do that. In January, we had huge growth of deposits from existing customers, from existing clients. So it showed that even such a step already gave them more trust on Debitum, and they increased their exposure with Debitum. So for sure, it will work well for us. And I'm looking forward to having this license. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, we mentioned already Zia DN Operator, a new legal entity basically in place also due to this licensing process. I understood that's also an entity that you set up basically already 2019, if I'm not mistaken. Now, the question to me is, prior this, Debitum was working under a roof or within a company called Zia Prosperi 2. And as far as I know, and from my understanding, this was kind of a more or less, or to the bigger extent, an IT service company, you know, with various IT services, you know, and products, services, consultancies, everything involved. Why haven't you, when you founded or when you went online with Debitum in September 2018, why haven't you, and that's maybe a question to you, Martins, why haven't you said in the first place, hey, why don't we just have a separate entity for the Debitum network platform to just have everything, you know, financially more in order? Because this kind of, I think, also was confusing investors a bit, you know, okay, we don't see any, you can't properly read any financial performance then from Debitum out of this, to break it down. So why have you decided in the first place to go with a different entity rather than setting up something specific for Debitum?
Yeah. First of all, I think it's on one hand, it happened naturally, because Zia Prosperi 2 was part of development. They were supporting development, and in the development of the platform, worked with the company, worked with the IT team, did some tasks for the platform. And then we at that time, we were still looking at the regulations throughout Europe to understand where it would be better to register an operator. And we were looking at Estonia and Latvia. Lithuania, we knew quite well already. Looked also at some other countries. I think we looked at Ireland and Malta. And so we were in this process. And for us, it was somehow that as soon as we understood that, yeah, we stay in Latvia. And to be honest, it was fast times for us at the moment. We were right out of gates developing the platform. We were on a tight schedule. We for some reason, in the startup kind of approach. We said, okay, that's it. In September, we go live. And only in the summer, I think it was July or even August, when we kind of, okay, yeah, it will be Latvia. There is no other option how to better structure it in a way that where the legal framework in 2018 is the most favorable. And we somehow said, okay, there is already a company, there is already partners, they already work on those things. Let it just go on like that. We were considering, we were considering opening a new company at the time, but we didn't know how it will end up, what will happen. There were some rumors that regulation will change, like in Latvia. So we didn't know if we actually will be able to stay in Latvia, we'll have to move to other place, or how this will happen. So we didn't go through the hustle of registering the company. We thought, okay, let it start as it goes. And then soon after, to be honest, we engaged in more discussions with the regulator, and then we understood that there will be no quick change in 2018-2019, that licensing should be done, but it's kind of a bit longer perspective. And then we registered the DN operator in, I think spring 2019. So that's kind of how it's kind of a business insight. It's how you hack in the new company, right? You just find a better opportunity to realize your goals faster. And for us, we thought that it is a faster way to use already our partner that is doing already works on the platform. And we thought, okay, why not? It's a quick fix for that time. But now we have become more mature, right? 2 years, third year in. And now we are moving to a new entity in this kind of correct way that you say. We'll have financial data. We are planning to start releasing interim financial data. There, of course, will be audits required, et cetera, et cetera. And I think we will get on the right track.
Hmm. Okay. Let's take a step even further back to kind of the start of the company and also the way it was funded. We look at the timeline now, the end of 2017, beginning of 2018, you know, Debitum took part in a kind of token generation event, you know, a kind of a crowd sale, which was back then. Also, I remember from our interview, when you tried to explain me a bit, because I'm not that familiar with the entire crypto business and blockchain, is something I'm a bit too far off, to be honest. But you explained me back then it was like a very popular way also for companies in that crypto blockchain area to raise capital, to set up companies. And back then, Debitum basically sold 400 million of DEB token that later then transferred to a funding of around roughly 6 million euro. Can you, in simple words, break down and explain what happened back then and how this exactly went down with the funding as such and what this kind of crowd sale has been, just to make it regular investors like me understand like what was really happening with the funding with the Debitum company in the beginning?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think. You need to understand what was happening in 2017 and specifically in the regions that we are in Lithuania, because Lithuania was a front runner of those token generation event kind of projects. It was America, USA, China, and then Lithuania was the third in the world by the amount of projects and the amount of funds raised. It blew out all venture capital investment in Lithuania from independence of 1991. So what was happening at that moment, technology, blockchain technology was on the rise. This was a big new thing. It was unclear at the same stage, right? There was a Bitcoin was there, Ethereum was there, some new blockchains appeared, etc. It's like a lot of technologies that was very, very promising. And then this model appeared, basically where you are able to sell tokens that people would use later on or will have some usage benefit later on in your platform, for funding to create that platform in the first place. And many projects were there. We were one of those. We took that opportunity for funding. There were a couple of similar companies, to be honest. We were not the only one company in that area, or in this kind of business area. There is a Hive Terminal, I think it was called in the beginning. Now I think it's just called Hive. And there was Populous in UK. Hive is, I think, Slovakian company. So there were more companies like us that were taking that advantage, that not advantage, that way of approach, that funding approach, that development approach. And we took that as well. So when we started developing the project, we actually, I don't know if you remember, but in 2018, there were actually more crypto-related features in the platform. You were able to receive your interest payments in DEB tokens. You were able to exchange euro to DEB, DEB to euro. There were a couple of things that we tested in 2018, 2019. And a lot changed from 17-18. Say, transaction costs increased dramatically. If transaction on blockchain in 17-18 costed maybe cents, then now in 2020, 2021, it would only also cost like $200 per transaction on a blockchain. So a lot of change. So we started in a way. So what it means? We wanted to see if this new technology and how we can apply this new technology for this business model, for funding business model. We tested different use cases. We still have some use cases right now, like loyalty program in the platform. At the moment, we believe that what is really missing is the volume, the overall volume that the platform turns around. So we are concentrating to increase the volume first, and then to get back to more utility of the token, because at the moment it doesn't go anywhere. For regular for investors who just want to invest, like you, it currently doesn't really make a big influence or big difference. Currently, they can use loyalty tokens to have a loyalty service, to have some services. We'll look into expanding those. But so basically, that's one way of funding and one way of looking at what we wanted to do, maybe to use this blockchain technology more. And as time go by, we had to experiment with that, test different things, and currently we are clear that we need to increase volume first, and only then look back to how to tie that blockchain technology more into it. Mm. And looking at the other projects, there were so many projects that died, just disappeared at all. So I think that I think that it's great that we are out there and live. And if you look at other similar projects like Populous or Hive, then our volumes are quite bigger than those. So I think that that we are on the right track. So that's how I look at it.
Yeah. It's interesting to me because it's not just on one or two videos, but whenever there's like some Debitum related content also on YouTube, you see like in the comments, there's sometimes always a few people that say like, take care, those are scammers. And I think a lot of is related to that crowd sale back then. So from your perspective, do you understand why maybe some investors in that crowd sale event, the token generation event, have been a bit frustrated because they have maybe invested with a different premise to Debitum? They expected that you would utilize those funds in a different way, so the value increases. So do you understand the frustration from their side, or how do you in general like would respond to those people? Mm.
Yeah, I to be honest, I definitely understand. I think I also understand the reasoning behind it. Let's be honest, if you take a step back, we understand that it was a huge hype. End of 2017, early 2018, it was huge hype about crypto projects. It was huge hype about those token generation event projects because they were happening. I think the first one was end of 16, early 17. So they were happening for a while. Many people made, I would say, paper money because they bought some tokens. They were most likely manipulated or very somehow traded quickly on the exchange. So prices increased, skyrocketed. People invested like $1,000 and became a millionaire overnight from some weird tokens from the project that disappeared in 2 months or something. So I think that was really Wild West situation. And at the same time, I would understand that many people who participated, they never... Let's be honest, I think they never read what we are planning to do. They never read how we are planning to do it, what are the alternatives ways, or that we are actually researching for the right ways, that we can't put it in a stone what we will do. And I think many just thought, okay, this is yet another financial project. Some other financial projects kind of skyrocketed. This will skyrocket. And I think if you crowdfund someone with an idea that it will bring you 100x, and then it kind of breaks down, the value of the token breaks down for reasons that is like market doesn't trade it or whatever. I think I understand the pain. At the same time, I think that no, that's a risk that you that's a risk that you take, and we are not going anywhere. We are still trying to bring that utility back in the future, but we see that we need the volume for that. And if someone, you know, we understand someone might be unhappy about the way how it goes, that it might be a longer term kind of thing, that you need to wait longer to get something back, if at all, that maybe your expectations didn't fit the reality. But I think, unfortunately, that's reality in any type of funding, in investment, etc. Right? That's why you always say this is not an investment advice. Investment is correlates with risks. Right? So I look at like that. I understand it. I can just say, sorry, guys, that the hype ended. I also lost money in other projects. So I definitely understand it. I lost project in another similar project. I bought tokens of another similar project, and it was raising really nice, and then it dropped totally. It raised to $70 per token, and it dropped to like almost zero. So I totally understand the people, but I think this is just emotion playing.
But in essence, basically, you would say, like, back then you didn't approach this crowd sale with a different intention. So, like, in a way that you broke any promises that you have given out back then, you just argue like circumstances have changed and you will still be willing to use or to work on utilizing those tokens, but you're missing like bigger volumes. I don't know, maybe you can specify also this, what you exactly mean by this and how this can also translate maybe to a better ending for those people that seem to be a bit upset with Debitum right now.
Yeah, no, what we did, a lot of things that we started off doing, a lot of things that we were envisioning in the very beginning, right? And those that didn't play out, you know, they saw, so when we made this feature, like interest rate in Debitums, it wasn't really used. We made a feature like you can trade it. It wasn't really used. And we saw that it actually makes us worse off because non-crypto people don't want to use the platform because they are scared. They don't know what it is. And it was just after everything was burst, right? So crypto, just Bitcoin dropped tremendously. So everyone thought crypto is bubble, crypto is scam, crypto is like evil thing, right? So we had to play with that. Of course, situations has changed. So I'm thinking that currently what we are looking for, we are looking to increase volumes. We are looking at some other possible spin-offs, that what other features we can do, how we can turn it so that we can bring back value or utility for tokens that should or could bring value. But that is a long process. That's a long, complicated process. We are looking now, like if you look at crypto area, now there is this decentralized finance kind of hype again, right? Some hype. Many companies do some decentralized finance. In some of those, you can understand, kind of you lend crypto or something, but some you don't understand. Many people would not understand what it means, like synthetic trading bots that bring you 500% yield. Like, how can that be? What it is? It's like complicated. I think it's complicated area, but we are trying to ride it. I personally think that the technology is quite strong, blockchain technology. I think cost of that, using that technology in a public space currently is too high. Definitely too high for a reasonable fiat-based project. Even for crypto-based project, if you look, you have to pay huge amounts in fees now. So I think we will have to play with it, research it further, see what happens, wait out, and find a solution for that.
One last question, which is a bit related, but really just with a very short remark from your side, Martins, because it's not the main topic also here on this channel, exactly. But currently, cryptocurrency, it's something that, you know, gets a lot of more and more attention, you know, worldwide. I see this in Germany, very specifically, Bitcoin, the rise and everything. You see like big companies partnering up, allowing Bitcoin payments or setting up the infrastructure for cryptocurrencies to pay with them. And I think it comes a lot more to mainstream. Just very quickly, what's your current view on cryptocurrencies, maybe Bitcoin in particular? Do you kind of, you know, how do you feel about it right now?
I think it's a market that you can never forecast what will happen, right? It seems that Elon Musk believes in Bitcoin, maybe want to use Bitcoin on Mars. Who knows? There are many speculations. at the same time, I have seen this Bitcoin payments have been used by scammers a lot. So when you allow Bitcoin payment in your shop or when not, or for your service, you never know if that Bitcoin was not stolen. Maybe it was like through money laundering or whatever. So I think it's very unclear space. It's very unclear space. It's unclear for me what it will be. I still think that the blockchain as a technology, it has huge potential. I don't know how much of that potential will be allowed by governments to actually realize that potential, but it's a different debate. We can have another video about that. So I wouldn't bet my money on the Bitcoin. I think it's just very risky. So I wouldn't bet my life savings or whatever on Bitcoin. Say for life savings, I would actually prefer platforms like Debitum. I think they are more kind of stable and understandable. But I definitely keep some position in crypto, because if it really skyrockets, it's a great opportunity, but for small amounts of your investable funds.
Okay, thanks for your statement. And to me, now coming a bit more towards today's situation, like after we dealt a bit maybe with kind of the ghosts from the past a bit that you see here and there with Debitum. I remember in our interview that we had March 2019, you said like because of this crowd sale, like the funding is ensured for 3 years until the end of 2020. Naturally, that leads kind of to the question like, or you said like to the end of 2020 without needing any additional, you know, income through our business, for instance, or we don't need any additional funding. How's the situation right now, the funding with Debitum at the moment?
That's true. So we have worked on other funding possibilities. This DN operator, the new operator that we have set up, it has equity of 310,000 euros. So that will be used for daily operations until we reach break even. We were planning to have it actually, we hoped to plan it last year. To be honest, I think this crisis, maybe other factors influenced it. Now we see realistically we could have it by the end of this year, 2021, at approximately like 10-15 million a portfolio, because commissions have increased, etc. And like Sergey might talk about it a bit more detail. And other what we have done is that we actually have for the development of the platform, we have also got some extra funding, extra functionality that we have promised to look into research from the government. So we have gotten research and development grant to develop a bit more artificial intelligence kind of based and machine learning based things. We are currently looking into that, developing new things for loan origination, scoring of loan originators, scoring of portfolio, etc. So we got some extra funds, basically some extra management of cash. So we solved that issue. Yeah, but without these things, I think yeah, that would be we would come to end of our funding. But now we have it for further. I still see no issue with that. I see that we will be able to reach break even with the funding that we have.
Okay, interesting. I wanted to get to that point, that break even point a bit in 2-3 following up questions, because I first wanted also that people understand a bit better, like how does in general the monetization model of Debitum work. Maybe Sergey, you, after having now a bit of a longer break, maybe you can take over and just explain like how does Debitum monetize? How does the platform earn revenue? And maybe also with some specific numbers, if you can.
Yeah, sure. So what we have on the platform, what investors see, usually they see each specific asset with interest rate. Yeah. So we do not charge investors any fee. We charge only loan originators. Yeah, this is a common situation for almost all marketplaces. We have two schemes how we work with loan originators. Either they pay fixed fee, it depends on the volumes, of course, but usually it's more or less like 2%. Yeah. When we started at the very beginning, it was like the idea that we will charge like very small fee, like only 1% per annum. This is how it started in 2019. Yeah, now we reviewed our monetization scheme, that it's and the service that we provide, the quality that we provide. I mean, we do really thorough due diligence of the loan originator. We monitor afterwards, we score, and we pay for scoring by ourselves. Yeah, we score by third parties like Coface, Credit Info, and other scoring providers. So all those costs needs to be covered also. Yeah. So then for some loan originators, it's a fixed fee, 2% per annum of the investment volume. And for some other loan originators, because we are testing both schemes, which is better, it's like all in. Yeah. So, for example, when they upload assets on the platform, let's say it was 8%, but all in for them, it's again depending on volumes. It could be 10%, 11%, 12%. So it varies from a loan originator asset volume and loan originator size. So average our fee, if you take it like on average, it's between 2 and 3%. For some we go down, for some we go up a little bit. Yeah, so this is our monetization scheme. This is how we earn, yes. And as Martin mentioned, we need to grow further with portfolio of 10, maybe 12 million. That would be enough to reach break-even. Yes, then income will cover all costs that we have monthly.
Yeah, that would have been my follow-up question, like which funding volume, which outstanding loan portfolio is required to reach that break-even point. Maybe you can also talk, if you can, in specific numbers, like about the general expenses that you have per month, like summing it up, because now adding probably the maintenance cost for the licensing, you got staff costs, you got marketing expenses, you got the IT infrastructure. So can you maybe give investors an idea what's like the overhead costs for Debitum each month on average?
Sure. Regarding the licensing, I want to say that we are very happy to have Martins, who is covering licensing. So we will not pay salary to Martins. he works for free for us. So that's why we are not going to increase cost on that. No, it's a joke, of course. Of course, we will hire additional IML officer for that process. Now it's a like part-time combined position with another functionalities, but after licensing, it will be another person. And by the way, if anyone from Latvia who is an IML officer or experienced guy is watching that, please contact us, because we are in the process of recruiting the proper person. Yeah, no, but coming back to cost, it's around 20,000 per month right now. So this is our expenses monthly. And it will grow a bit, yeah, because as I said, we will hire, we will hire two new people now, one for ML, another one for investors, because we saw how well it worked. When we have kind of like account management position, when we approach investors personally, and we decided to have another dedicated person for that. Yeah, so that will increase our cost a little bit. But as I said, our revenue is growing every month because the portfolio is growing constantly, and so it should cover all those additional expenses. Yes. Mm-hmm.
To me, I think in comparison, I think that sounds like very small overhead costs. Like you keep your operational costs very short or very, very small. I think that's quite interesting.
So, Danny, to be honest, we have decreased it quite a lot. We have figured out ways how to decrease the cost, how to optimize, got some that extra research grant that is compensating some part of the cost. So we have been working on that very, very strongly because we thought that at the moment we don't really need to have a huge cost base. We can work differently. And that's also maybe a reason why we where we concentrate on less individuals, less investors, but on higher volumes and providing more value, more information to them, because we have the data and the information, and it is kind of more cost efficient as well for us, to be honest, to deal with that rather than deal with a huge amount of people and with different individual requests, etc. Well, like we have been working on that a lot, and Sergey has helped throughout his career with Debitum to bring that into some order.
From which level have you been decreasing the operational costs? Like when you're now to 20, where have you been before tops? What was it?
Like the very, very tops, it's like just crazy. It has a couple of hundreds per month, I think it was the very, very tops. Because we did like in the very beginning, we really wanted because we also got
you
the
mean
funding,
like 100,000 so or 200,000 or
yeah 200 and more. So I went the launch September 2018. That was huge cost for us, maybe even more, because we went to two huge events, we sponsored those events, we wanted to put into the marketing, we had advisors, marketing people who suggested to do that. Let's be honest, it didn't pay back as well as it should have been. So we made our fair share of experience and trouble. So, and through time, we figured out that we need to do it differently. And that's what I was also talking earlier, that you need to experiment all the time, research how to do it better, what works, what doesn't. Unfortunately, some of those mistakes or learnings are, you know, lessons learned. So unfortunately, some of them cost.
Yeah.
No, that's life.
And when do you forecast this break-even point to be turning in?
End of this year. We actually have planned to get a 10 million portfolio in the end of this year, and I believe it's doable. What we see now, how we grow now, month to month, and it seems we may even do better. Yeah, so that's our expectations.
Mm. And yep. the additional funding, you feel like will it be necessary until then, or is that something that will come in place at some point this year? And also, like, how big will that that grant that you talked about, how big is it going to be, and how long will that kind of prolong then also the sustainability of the platform?
We are already receiving it on a monthly basis, okay. I think for some half a year now, and it will still go on for, if not mistaken, 1 year and a half. So it covers some of the, it covers partly most of the part of loan origination risk assessment activity, because in that activity, we also do research for that activity. When we do activity, we collect data, we do research for the approach. We are improving. We are already doing the first algorithms that could improve us to make it more automatic. So that's an ongoing already. That's an ongoing process. So I think that for 2021, we will still burn money, and that's where this equity of DN operator comes into place. And at the end, I think at the end of the year, it should already be good. If other things don't change, life is always, you don't know how it will be, what will be the market, commissions, etc. But now, looking at volumes and where we go, where the team is heading, it's a really strong start of 2021.
All right. Then I think that should cover, I think, most of the parts that I wanted to talk about. Thank you very much for your time today, to both of you. Is there, from your side, any last remarks, maybe something that we have left out to discuss about, but you feel like that is of importance to share now in the end with the audience?
I think that we are a really great niche player that is concentrating on business loans and is concentrating on different level of risk assessment, risk management. We also see that at the moment when our risk team is strong. We have we are doing great job at risk, and I think our time will come when more users, more investors will actually understand the value, or will notice the value of that strong risk assessment, strong due deal, bigger safety at the end of the day, one way or another, and better track record compared to other players in the market. No defaults whatsoever. So I think slowly, but we will get to huge increases later on, and we see that it's just the beginning in 2021. So come join us in this journey.
Yes.
To a better, safer, and sustainable investment that will accumulate wealth for users.
And Sergey, you, any last words?
Well, like almost nothing to add, actually. What Martin has just said, I can confirm that. Happy to invite new investors or existing investors. Please increase work with us more, and we are happy to answer any questions. You can reach us out in through website, or you can find myself as well on LinkedIn or any other tool. Yes, and thanks for inviting us, Danny. Thanks for to view it like for, till the end to our investors. And yeah, all the best.
All right.
And last final thing from me is that don't be that our new account manager Alina might contact you sooner or later. So look forward to that, and ask all the open questions you have to her. Take advantage of this approach that we want to do, a personalized approach to people, to users, providing information, answering answers that they might have.
All right, looking forward to that. Then thanks again, gentlemen, for your time, and then wish you all the best for 2021 and Debitum developments.
Thank you. Bye-bye.